I'd like to convene the Finance Committee, and before we take any committee action on the minutes and so on, I do want to make an announcement. Representative Aaron Murphy has requested that we not take up House File 2680, that's the GAMC bill, this evening, so if anybody's in the audience for that one, it's my understanding that there's some potential changes or amendments that are under discussion and a new fiscal note would be needed. So that bill will be taken up, well, there isn't a time or date certain, but sometime soon. Apparently as soon as they get the fiscal note ready, we'll reschedule it. There is a request, though, that just from the standpoint of saving a little paper, I guess, and a little work for the staff, keep that information with House File 2680 or the bill and so on in your folders when we adjourn. But we still have a major bill up tonight, and, of course, that's the capital investment. We have the minutes for May the 12th. Representative Kahn, you're looking at some papers there. Have you looked at the minutes?
Excellent.
Okay, Representative Kahn moves approval of the minutes for Tuesday, May the 12th. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. And let's see. Representative Hilty, did you have a chance to look at the minutes for February the 8th?
I'm afraid, Mr. Chair, I don't have my...
I looked at you. You don't even have it over there yet.
Here.
Well, we'll call on our distinguished vice chair, Representative Benson. You've got your papers out.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I did look at the notes, so I would like to move.
Okay. Representative Benson moves the amendments for February the 8th. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Houseman, we'll be taking up your bill, and if you would care to make a motion, and then we'll have you describe the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move the Capital Investment Division report for House File 2700, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Houseman?
I move House File 2700, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us. Then if you would explain the bill.
And Mr. Chair, I know some of you are on the Capital Investment Committee, and you heard this this one little story yesterday, but I just had to repeat it at least once more. And that is from the Minnesota Historical Society files. They tell about the period of time, even before we were a state, and Minnesota's economy tanked, the credit market was frozen, there was no available capital to speak of, and the state's leaders knew that getting railroad construction on track in Minnesota was critical to needed economic development to help move the state out of the throes of the worst economic depression of the 19th century. So when the legislature first convened in December of 1857, it immediately passed legislation authorizing the state to let bonds for railroad construction. And I thought the context of that was interesting for us, and that in times of serious economic circumstances, since Minnesota became a state, smart bonding initiatives have been the driver of economic development initiatives that have made our state what it is today. And that has been part of our conversation throughout. We have some people have suggested that, of course, this kind of bill shouldn't be the state's main employment strategy. I would totally agree. It is only one small piece, one bright spot that we can take advantage of in a bad economy, low interest rates, and low bids. One of the other criticisms of this approach has been that these jobs are temporary. And yesterday I spoke to one of our labor leaders who talked about that term, and he pointed out that all of our jobs are temporary. The construction begins and it ends, and they go on to the next job. So what we have tried to do, and I don't know how many of these handouts are in your packet tonight, but we give members estimates that the state economist gives us about jobs, that Minsky gives us, even that the Natural Resources Conservation Service gives us when we fund some of these projects. I would just point out one, three lines in the area for employment and economic development. Just for the three convention centers, there are 1,169 construction jobs, and they all, three of the cities, tell about the ongoing jobs that are added. As is always the case, the bill focuses on a couple of broad priorities. Higher education is always at the top. Wastewater infrastructure, clean water infrastructure is key. It's invisible, but it is key to business and industry being able to prosper. And, of course, transportation. And now we have a number of modes. And in some of those cases, very small investments have a huge payoff. In Winona, they tell us that when we fund ports, a small investment in ports allowed them to double the tonnage through that port in 2008. And the headline, in fact, of the newspaper said, a recession, port tonnage up in 2009. And they cite their plans for still more expansion. And you can imagine that when you double tonnage through a port, all the other businesses on land that grow up. In Thief River Falls, DigiKey, a very big employer, 2,000 employees, was committed to all of those employees through this difficult time, laid off no one, and now they are ready to add another 150. They have this little problem. To be internationally competitive, their product has to arrive very quickly. And in cold, cold Thief River Falls on some of those mornings, they have to thaw out the airplane and they have to thaw out the broom that sweeps the runway. And our investment in an airport hangar in that case partners us with that employer in Thief River Falls. I won't speak much to the spreadsheet because I'm sure that you have all read it and I'm sure everyone in the audience by now knows all the details. I would just simply say from amendments offered yesterday in committee, you will just find two changes on your spreadsheet. We added a Rochester Workforce Center co-location a deed lease funding project that doesn't add to the GO total. It's user financing. So that is a new line on your spreadsheet. And by amendment last night, we added the Perham Resource Recovery Facility under the Greater Minnesota Business Development. The Senate has that under the Capital Assistance Program, and so in conference we'll try to figure out which is the appropriate spot for that. Those are really the only changes on the spreadsheet. I should say just a word about higher education. You will note that we don't fund physics and nanotechnology. It doesn't mean we are not committed to physics and nanotechnology, but that was a university express priority. Falwell Hall has been on the drawing board for much longer, and they wanted to complete that project. The Senate does include planning dollars for that building, and so that will be an issue that that we can probably resolve in conference committee. One of the reasons why the House is bringing more Minsky dollars to the table is the unique nature of this economic time with unemployment is that a lot of those unemployed people are going back to school to train for new jobs. And so the stress on these institutions in terms of higher enrollment is significant. And this year, unlike others, we may put a little more emphasis there. I will just note that on the spreadsheet for Minsky, You note we don't include dollars for property acquisition. The one in Dakota County is already done since the request was made, and the additional property acquisitions we believed could wait to another year. I should say just a few other things about the bonding mill itself. Some members of the public, I think, have heard us talk about a $1 billion bonding bill and wonder why we wouldn't just use that $1 billion to balance the budget. And if it were that easy, I'd be the first to make that motion. But the money is not transferable. It comes in a different form. It's more like the 20 or 30 year mortgage on your house. This is the state's house that we pay for over the long term. Though we are moving quickly at the start of session, it certainly didn't come together quickly. We have probably spent a year on this, traveling the states. Elements of this have probably been worked on for 4 years. Always in a bonding bill, we try to be fair statewide so that taxpayer dollars are equitably spent across the state and that they're balanced among the many areas of responsibility. The size is responsible. The new Pawlenty debt service guidelines have been shared with us, and our bill is well within those new debt service guidelines. I wanted to say just one word about the discussion about some of the arts centers. I think we don't always understand that all the dimensions in this bill have an economic impact. And if you have been visited by on that Citizens Day on the Hill, the Citizens Day for the Arts, they have probably given you these statistics. But in the state of Minnesota, nonprofit arts and culture organizations and their audiences spent $838.5 million. This was a 2005 figure. I suspect that is higher. The bulk of that, of course, is spent in the seven-county metro area. Of that amount, $719 million is in the seven-county metro area. So there are many ways in which the infrastructure we invest in here builds that healthy economy that we hope will be Minnesota's future. It's a small contribution, but a contribution nonetheless. That kind of contribution to economic development is even true in the area of trails. And Lanesboro has told that story well. People were at some point resistant to some of that trail development, and then a city like Lanesboro discovered it literally transformed their local economy. So we make these investments carefully. We make them with an eye to what prepares us for when the economy recovers. And I think I will just refer you to the fact that the bill itself lists all the parts of the state where investment is made. If you want to know all of the areas that are eligible for dam renovation and renewal, that list is there. The significant one that we've added is the Coon Rapids Dam and the Lanesboro Dam. Also in the bill are all the state parks and trails and the investments made. I will tell you that Representative Wagenius and her committee looked very carefully at all the requests, and she gave me her little chart. And when she recommended to us, this year they downplayed acquisitions, and they focused on those projects that were most job intensive. And that was an intentional direction that her committee made as they made recommendations to us. So those, rather than, Mr. Chair, take a great deal of time, I suspect the spreadsheet and content is somewhat familiar to members, and I would certainly be open to questions, or we could move to amendments.
Yeah, we're ready. We have two authors' amendments, and we were just going over a modification and one when you completed your comments. Representative Hausman, the first one I have is H2700A3 or A33. Is that the one you want to take up first?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The first part of that, roughly lines 1-3 through 1-7, when we change that Rochester co-location, the deed component to that, it changes some of the numbers, so totals and Minskew numbers change. Lines 1-8 through 1-10, initially we believed that this was a project that qualified for PFA, but because there are a number of unorganized communities along that stretch, they do not qualify. So we make clear that that we believe this project needs a wastewater collection treatment facility. Jim Rhodes from administration requested lines 111 through 114. We had added an amendment about construction waste, and he just wanted to make clear that we were talking about non-hazardous and that are located within 40 miles of a recycling facility. Mr. Chair, my understanding is that I am not to offer line 115 because Representative Clark has decided not to pursue that particular portion. So I will delete in this amendment line 115.
Yeah, my understanding. She'll have an amendment, I think, later. Then this correction won't be needed relative to her future amendment.
Okay.
Madam Chair, if I can...
Representative Clark,
and then,
did you have...
Could I just say one more?
Well, do you want me to complete the amendment first before we discuss it?
No, I just wanted to say what that meant to remove it, why we were removing it. In talking with Chairman Solberg, it's clear that we don't have... What this would do would put off the debt service for two more years, and we'd have to come up with an $800,000 cut to the budget, and I'm not comfortable doing that until we can have a conversation with Minnesota Housing Finance Agency about what the options are. So I'd like to do that between now and the next hearing committee meeting.
Okay, so conversations will be taking place later relative to that section then, so you won't be including that line in your...
I am deleting that line, is that my understanding? So I'm deleting line 115. Okay. And then the second page, as we sometimes do, the shape of a particular trail changes, and we change that language to Marsh Lake Dam. And Ms. Novak tells me, by the way, on the other author's amendment, you're going to understand what 3.8 and 3.11 are. That language comes from MMB, and so that portion will be clear when we talk about the other author's amendment. My understanding from Ms. Novak is on line 3.7, I'm to say delete lines 28 to 34. Ms. Novak?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, that's right. I correct the typo.
Okay. So on 3.7, page 78, delete lines 28 to 34.
Okay, and I think Representative House had a question on the amendment.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Representative Hausman, back to line 1-8 through 1-10, the $285,000 for the Voyageurs National Park Clean Water Joint Powers Board, et cetera, et cetera. It comes out of the Greater Minnesota Business Development Infrastructure Grant Program, which is used in Greater Minnesota. And by taking this money, we kind of eliminate a city out of Greater Minnesota. Is there somewhere else that this could be taken from, maybe at a later date? Or
yes, this one and the Perham one that we and I think that was drafted by I think Larissa Paltola can relate to that. We know the Senate takes it out of that capital assistance program, and we thought we could resolve that later, and I think the same thing will be true of this one.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions on the amendment? Okay, Representative Hausman renews her motion that Amendment H-2700A-33 be adopted. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Hausman, then you have H-2700A-32 as an author's amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The first portion of that...
You want to move the amendment?
I move the A32 amendment.
Okay, the amendment is before us. Representative Hausman.
This entire amendment is brought to us by MMB. And my understanding is that this has been checked with bond counsel and with the Attorney General and with State Board of Investment, anybody who is referenced in here, that all of the pieces have been checked out, lines 1 through 1.3 to 1.7. That comes out of the Office of the Legislative Auditor report, where some already were doing this, paying for capital costs of staff directly attributable to the capital project. But they were doing it without tracking, really. So we're formalizing it, and MMB monitors this. In lines 110 through 119, I believe they've discussed this previously, and they're suggesting one point in time as being a reasonable time for that debt capacity forecast. And then there is a discussion about... tax-exempt bonds and refunding bonds that we make a slight change in. My understanding is Washington is going to make this permanent, this type of bonding. Build America bonds, taxable bonds are sometimes a better deal, and we're setting up a formula for this type of bond. And when we do that, we need additional bonds to pay the underwriter costs because it's this different type of bond. It should not be a bigger hit to the general fund. And by the way, local governments can already do this. So it's not really anything that is new in this state since local governments can do it. And then on lines 220 to 222, and this has been discussed with the State Board of Investment, they add or a suitable financial institution as another place for bids for securities to be purchased. The last 226 to 229 is the same issue as lines 1.3 through 1.7 comes out of the Office of the Legislative Auditor report. Again, everything in here comes from MMB and has been run by the appropriate offices.
Mr. Chair. To the question, particularly 26 through 29 and 30, I don't think it's bad for state agency to use that. But where is the oversight of the report to the legislature on the cost of that? Is that
MMB is coming forward? We did ask that question, and that oversight is. Please join me up here. Oversight is provided by MMB, and it's really routine.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. Mr. Chairman and Representative Solberg, for the record, my name is Kathy Cardell, Assistant Commissioner in Minnesota Management and Budget. For those of you that also serve on the Capital Investment Committee, as Representative Hausman said, you will remember that an audit was done for the first time in many, many years on the state's general obligation bond program. The results of that audit were released in 2008, December of 2008, and one of the findings in the audit was that there were certain state agencies, entities, what have you, that received state bond money that were using those funds to pay for essentially staff costs for delivering those projects that they were authorized to go ahead and build, which in and of itself, so long as it is all tracked appropriately with those costs tied directly to the specific projects, was not a problem from a tax law perspective or a bond issue perspective. The issue that we had and that the auditor noted is that MMB did not know that these agencies were using those costs for those purposes. And so their recommendation to us was to develop a policy with respect to utilizing that, since it is a permissible cost for bond project purposes. Which we did, and we met with all of the agencies that received bond appropriations a couple of times over the course of after the end of the last session and into the early fall. We developed a policy. It was released in October. What the policy says, and we did provide the copies of the policy when we talked about this with the capital investment staff, but essentially any agency that wants to do this would be required to submit a plan for how they are going to track their costs. The policy lays out what that plan needs to include. It is to be submitted to their executive budget officer. We review the plan. We either make them amend the plan or we reject the plan or we accept it. They are then required to certify to us every quarter those costs, report those costs to their executive budget officer. The executive budget officer reviews those costs, brings those any issues or questions that they see to either our capital budget coordinator or myself. But remember, this policy just went into effect. The policy was released in October. The intent is that it would be effective beginning with this bonding bill, so prospectively. Now, the thing that maybe not all of you are aware of is the fact that you have authorized in other capital appropriations that agencies be permitted to use bond proceeds for these purposes. Chapter 152, the big transportation bill from 2008, is the largest example, but on a different scale, routinely for Bowser, you have done that as well. So it is it has been explicitly put in law that it be used for this purpose. Bond Council, again, in talking about this with the agencies and in our development of this policy, reminds us that it is no issue with it so long as we track it, which we're proposing to do via the policy, and we felt, but they felt very strongly that there needed to be something explicit in this bonding bill that allows that, and then you could make a determination on a case-by-case basis if you did not want to have the proceeds available for that purpose. I know that's a long answer, but...
Mr. Chair, I don't have any problem with that except that all of that is internal into the administration with the tracking and so forth, and unless we ask for it, there's no report to the legislature of how much that is. And so does your policy include reports to the appropriate bodies for each one of those or other routine reporting mechanisms?
Ms. Cardell.
And I think, Mr. Chairman and Representative Solberg, that's okay if you want to do that. It'll be a work in progress because most agencies are not used to doing this. And
no, Mr. Chair, I don't think it's each agency. I think the report would come from the internal reporting that the MMB gets.
Oh, I understand, sir. Yes.
And it should. We should at least have some kind of mechanism to know how much of this is being used for administrative costs within that policy. I don't necessarily want to have an amendment to this, but I do want to see that there are routine reports provided to the appropriate legislative committees.
And perhaps, Mr. Chairman and Representative Solberg, perhaps then in the conference committee process, we could work to develop some language that would provide reporting to your committee or to all three committees, however you'd like to have that done.
I would appreciate that, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other discussion? Representative Coles, and then who was the other one? Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Was somebody else?
And Ms. Cardell, thank you for the explanation of this language. Representative Solberg, I'm not so sure that I am comfortable with this. It actually concerns me. And I guess the concern I have, shame on me for not having noticed it in the 2003 transportation bill and in the Bowser issues in the past, but it seems to me as though we're kind of creating a new rule here that we can do this all the time unless we say it can't happen, as opposed to saying that we ought not use bond proceeds for administrative costs unless we say it's okay. So we're kind of changing the norm, changing the presumption, and that causes me some pause. I'm not so sure that it's a good policy for us to be utilizing bond proceeds to pay administrative costs on a routine basis. And so I'm gonna vote no on the amendment today. I'm gonna think about this some more, and we may want to have some more discussion about this as moving through. Representative Hausman, I understand that it doesn't create problems from a tax perspective or from a bond perspective, but there is a policy issue here that I think is significant, and so I'll look forward to hearing some more discussion about it.
Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, I think that is a good observation, and here's a suggestion. I just saw this afternoon, so my committee actually hasn't discussed this. We talked about doing this as a standalone bill that moves through separately. And if there were sentiment on the committee, we could certainly hear it in the Capital Investment Committee and have this pass through as a standalone bill. And then I think several of these issues could be added. If it were the chair's wish, I would be willing to withdraw the amendment at this point. I don't think it affects the bill before us, Ms. Cardell. Is that?
It only would, to the extent, Mr. Chairman and Representative Hausman, that state agencies are, if this were not to happen, there will be certainly state agencies that will be affected by this, because there have been agencies for a long time that have been using bond proceeds for this purpose.
Ms. Novak, I'm told that maybe part of this may be needed, or...
Mr. Chair and members, lines 1.3 to 1.7 and 2.26 to 2.30 directly amend the capital investment bill, and it would be difficult, not impossible, but more difficult to put that in at a later time.
So I think, Representative Hausman, then we would probably need to divide. Well, if you've withdrawn the amendment, then I'm suggesting that
as an alternative. I'm certainly I trust that they have done due diligence. I've had a long working relationship with them, and I know they do their work. And so I would feel comfortable going forward with the amendment, but I also am conscious of your committee time. I would offer it, but right now I have not yet withdrawn it.
So it's the entire amendment
is still before.
Okay. Any further discussion, Representative Broad?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess my confusion or maybe my disagreement is with the underlying policy, not necessarily the language of the amendment, because if the policy is in place, I understand the need for the clarification in statute. At some point, and I don't know, Representative Hausman, if this is the point at which we should have the discussion, I guess I feel very similar to Representative Coles in terms of the underlying policy. One of my concerns is that you're allowing the use of staff resources for a project-based, for a project. The concern is if you're bringing people on in some capacity, that those folks then are ongoing. So what have you done to, in terms of staff costs, on an ongoing basis that are accounted for on a one-time basis? And I'm not sure if I'm making that very clear, but I guess I'm concerned to what it does in terms of an inadvertent result to increase agency costs down the road.
And I think it's important, again, to set the context. This language comes out of the Office of the Legislative Auditor's report. Some are doing it already and will continue to do it without tracking. And so I think the concern here is when you formalize it, it allows them to monitor it. That's really the only change we're making.
And Mr. Chairman and Representative Hausman, I guess I don't have a... The question I guess I'm asking you is if we can have a discussion at some point in your committee or in another committee about the underlying policy, because I do agree that if you're going to have the policy in place, you should be able to track it. I understand where MMB is coming from, but that underlying policy is, I think, now that we all know that's what's been occurring, is something that we should decide is either a good thing or not a good thing, and I think that's a discussion that we absolutely should have. I don't know what the right time for it is, whether it's after the bill passes or not, but if the policy is in place, I understand the need for the language. I question the policy.
And Mr. Chair, that we actually have had some conversation about this, and I know if Minshew, for example, is in the audience, They have testified at length about this as a tool, so we have had a lot of background in our committee on it, but I think look to the chair for advice. I have just this long working relationship with MMB and feel usually they have thought these through rather carefully based on current practice, but on the other hand, if this committee would prefer that we move this in another direction.
Representative Solberg.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think it's appropriate for us here. I know that a person, let's say, in one of the agency may be working on a capital project part of the day and doing something else another part of the day, and they have time cards that would charge appropriately for this particular project. There's in a capital bonding project. The problem is that I just want to make sure that the legislature is aware of that as well, and it just isn't an internal tracking. And so I'm comfortable with it going forward. I think it's appropriate, and if you look at some of the details of some of the agency's budget, they will have already indicated that that some of that is appropriately charged to the bonding bill as well.
Okay, Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Solberg. I hear what you're saying, but I guess my concern then is we appropriate money to agencies for certain activities to be completed. If they're taking certain staff resources and shifting them for this activity and then having it financed through another mechanism, then I would question whether the full appropriation for the agency on the other activities is necessary or if there's some offset there. So I guess I don't know the extent to which this is used, and maybe it's not used much, maybe it's little impact. I don't know. I guess I just think that the policy itself deserves a greater attention, and maybe tracking it will do that. Maybe that's step one.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. The next amendment that I have is by Representative Rukavina. It's A10-2069. Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think you got a mat, Mr. Chair. Excuse me.
That's fine.
But you should be speaker. Sure. But anyway, I have a map that I'm handing out so people can understand. We've had this discussion before, and what this amendment would do would be really to be honest to the people of this state regarding the proposed Lake Vermilion State Park. The map points out that there already is a state park on Lake Vermilion, and it has over 5 miles of shoreline. Nothing's ever been done to it to develop it at all. And I just want to make sure, members, that we keep Governor Pawlenty's promise, if we purchase that other attached land, that we develop it as he promised, so that there will be a functional state park there. And Commissioner Holston had said that it would take $30 million to develop that infrastructure on the land, which would be to the east of where you see this map. And so this appropriates $30 million. And then, members, the language down below says that until the state and the DNR does something to actually make and create a state park as promised to the people up of the state and up north, that they can continue to use that land as they have in the past. So, Mr. Chair, I would offer that as an amendment to the bill.
The motion is before us. Representative Hausman, any advice?
Mr. Chair, my advice would be, and I'll defer to Representative Wagenius to see if she agrees with this, but it appears if we divided this amendment that the lines 1-8 to 1-17 or somewhere about thereabouts, the management, that we could accept that. I think that's a practical advice. The first part, unfortunately, though I would perhaps happily lift the target of this bill, I have something of an informal agreement with leadership and Senate as we're moving this through, that we're trying to keep our bill just under a billion, and unfortunately this would add 30 million additional. And so the first part of the amendment that adds 30 million would be something I would have to oppose.
Okay. Are you asking, Representative Hausman, that the amendment be divided then, and which half would you want to vote on first? Because that may lead the discussion. We've already got
I will make that motion.
And, okay, you're asking it to be divided, and which half would you like to vote on first?
We could vote on the second half.
Okay, the second half first. Any discussion then on the second half of the amendment? Representative Hausman.
I would just offer my support to Representative Rukavina on the second half of the amendment. I think it's a good amendment.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. We now have the first half of the amendment, lines 1.3 through 1.6 that deal with the 30 million. So any discussion on that motion?
Mr. Chair?
Representative,
could I just ask Representative Hausman, and I know in her heart that she really wants to do this, but aside from that, do you have, as the governor promised that he wouldn't veto the bill if it was under $1 billion?
Well, we're still moving a bill through the House. When I have acceptance from the House of a bill, then I think perhaps we would have some conversation.
Would the DNR like to comment that they'd actually move through and do this with the $30 million? Or they,
we don't generally take testimony, but if a member has a question of someone in the audience, we entertain that.
Mr.
So if
Chair,
you have a question of DNR, that would be
fine. I guess we're going to go ahead and vote on this, and that's fine. But I feel I have to do this because I just think, members, you have to understand there's 27 miles of shoreline that the state of Minnesota owns on Lake Vermilion, and you're looking at the Sedan State Park basically from right here is the boundary of the current state park, and it goes like this. It goes up to the Sedan Underground Mine, and it comes right to where you see Sweettown Bay on the east side. And nothing's ever been done to develop it, and the land that they're currently going to purchase is much harder terrain and will never be developed. So, you know, I just felt for the sake of my constituents that I had to offer this and the people in northeastern Minnesota, because the DNR, with their lowball estimate, admits that it's going to take $30 million to make a state park, and I don't think it's ever going to happen. And so I thought that at least we should keep our promise and be honest with the people of this state.
I'm not sure where we are. Did you have a question of DNR? I mean,
they'll just come down and deceive us, and it'll be like Swiss cheese. I'll be shooting holes.
But,
it's
clear, and maybe as a reminder, being that we haven't been in session for a while, you know, we take testimony in the divisions, and then in full committee, if members have a question of someone, then we entertain that.
But,
so,
but I would hope that maybe the Republicans,
if you'd like to entertain having that question entertained.
No, I hope the Republicans would help me on this, because I know that their governor wants that state park badly, and that he wants an appropriation to do it. So I'm hoping at least I can get their support on this.
Any further discussion? And you kind of gave us advice, Representative Hausman, at the beginning on the total
Chair,
amendment, but on this particular
section. I reluctantly
oppose
this portion of the amendment.
Okay.
That's okay.
So the motion is before us. Any further discussion? Hearing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Okay, motion defeated.
Once again.
Representative Rukavina, I think I have another one here from you. It's H2700A34.
Mr. Chair, this, in keeping with my trying to help Minnesota and the U.S., I'm trying to use to the extent possible biofuels, biomass in fuel sources on Section 1 where there's any new building with a heating systems, that they make them capable to the extent possible of burning biofuels so we can help our rural economy in Minnesota.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Any advice from the chair?
Mr. Chair, on this, I would defer to Representative Hilty for his advice to the committee.
Representative Hilty, would you like to comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the key to this amendment is the phrase "to the extent possible." As long as consideration of a biomass as a fuel source were made along with all of the other alternatives, including perhaps more cost-effective or more environmentally friendly alternatives, I think that it's appropriate for this to be one of the considerations.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Either for Representative Rukavina or Representative Hilty, can you help me understand what's the X factor on a biomass heating system versus a conventional heating system, and how much more does a system like that cost today, knowing that, you know, obviously as technology advances, hopefully cost is going to come down, but how much more does it cost today if we're going to heat a building like this with a system that can use biomass fuel versus a conventional system?
Mr. Chair, I believe we've retrofitted the University of Minnesota Morris campus, although the furnace is having some difficulty burning a dust instead of a pellet type thing. But there are many furnaces available, and actually that generate electricity or heat or a combination of both that could save costs. So it's just to the extent possible, and I think there's an option there for fuels to keep fuels and waste from whether it's corn stover or soybean waste or wood waste to be able to use it. There's a number of companies that are starting to produce pellets again, corn pellets and everything else. So it's just language that permits that and asks all of these projects to look at the possibility of using that.
Right. Representative Coles, said.
I appreciate the answer. I'm not sure I'm there with it yet, but I appreciate the answer.
Okay. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe Ms. Novak can help me, not being a lawyer. I have no idea what the words "to the extent possible" even mean in a legal framework. What does that mean? That I have to just get a bid? Do I have to? I mean, everything is possible. So what does that mean?
Representative Wagenius on that point.
Well, the description that I heard from Representative Rukavina perhaps would, the phrase "to the extent practicable" would be more descriptive of what he said and avoid the questions that I'm hearing here. So perhaps he would have amended to say "to the extent practicable."
Mr. Chair, I'm hearing three attorneys here, practicable or reasonably possible, whatever they want to do is absolutely reasonably possible with me.
somebody needs, if there's going to be a change in the language, somebody needs to make a motion.
I will move to the extent practicable. Is that correct, Esquire? Okay. That's practicable. Okay.
I think Representative Rukavina, you're just incorporating that in your amendment. That
yes.
Everybody has that down. Okay. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe Representative Hilty could help with this. Representative, is the word biomass actually defined in law?
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, yes, it is. One of the initiatives that we will have in my committee in this session is to clarify the definition of the word biomass, because there are sort of conflicting or at least somewhat disparate definitions of biomass in various sections, and hopefully we'll be able to clear that up.
Okay, Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'll follow up to Representative Broad's question, because I'm not an attorney either, and I don't know what the difference between possible and practicable is, so maybe an attorney in the room. Does that mean if it's cheaper, if it's equal priced? I guess I don't know what that means. Is that a mandate? I'm not sure. And then Representative Rukamina, or Representative Junkie, I saw you nodding over there. So would any heater come equipped with this? I'm not sure in the pricing. You're indicating that they're pretty much the same price, whether it has this capability or whether it doesn't. So whether I go get something that burns corn pellets or traditional heating, it's going to be the same price. Is that what you're saying?
Representative Rukamina, it was addressed to you. But
or me.
Or okay, yeah. Representative Junkie.
Well, just to follow up, I think this is a good amendment. Certainly, Minnesota now has a lot of fuels that can be used here. As Representative Rukamina said, whether it's agriculture-based or timber-based or whatever, we have all sorts of resources. Most of these furnaces would be dual-fuel type units. You know, instead of burning fuel oil or instead of burning coal or instead of burning some of these other things, they'd be set up so they could dually burn or fire other products, just like a U.S. steel furnace can burn almost anything up on the Iron Range the way they have that configured. We could do the same thing with we could do the same thing with these. I have a unit in my house, and maybe some of you do too, that can burn either corn grain, or it can burn wood pellets, or it can burn stover pellets, or I can burn nothing. I can turn on my electric heat. And so I think what this is saying is, to the extent practical and available, retrofit these things so that you have available a number of sources of fuel. That's what he's getting at. And burn whichever one is more cost-effective and more environmentally sound. And I think it's a good sound practice. And for the most part, you know, my my burner in my place that basically heats my entire house was about just over $2,000. So I don't know how that compares to the cost of a furnace. You can call former Representative Krinke and find out. But I think it's pretty reasonable for what I get out of it.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor of the amendment A34 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. We have another one here from Representative Rukavina. Representative Rukavina, I think you're probably getting your entire legislative agenda done for the session tonight. Or
you go to that conference today.
I have to. I have other things that I'm doing.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, Representative Rukavina moves then H2700A35. Representative Rukavina.
This would allow in Head Start there in the bill. There are grants that are awarded by Department of Human Services, I believe.
Let's be ready to pass out the next one.
And these would just lift the cap on it. It's still the same amount of money in the bill, but it would increase the cap on either one program, say for early childhood, and a number of programs, whether it's Head Start, early childhood, or any other of those programs. Early childhood education.
Okay, any discussion on the motion? Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, is this, I'm not familiar with these grants. Are these grants that are funded through GO bonds, or are these grants that are, I see Ms. Novak nodding yes, so I think the question's been answered. But and the cap is currently $300,000. Why $500,000? Why not a million? Why from 750 up to 2 million? Why not 5 million? Help me understand.
There's 2 million in the bill. So this would allow a bid to be awarded, perhaps the one project that's worth 2 million, or four projects worth $400,000. Or $500,000, excuse me.
Okay, Representative
Mr. Chair, just to the members, this is early childhood facilities grants. They were passed for many years for about $15 million have been done in these grants before for about 63 projects. There happened to be a project in Virginia that was heard in division that was a large project, and I think this amendment is acceptable, and we should support this. It potentially, it's a competitive basis, so they'd all have to compete and perhaps the one in Virginia would come out for the whole $2 million, but we would see. They'd have to compete with everybody else.
Okay, Representative Hausman.
And, Mr. Chair, I was going to defer to Representative Slavik. I heard her say that she was that she approved the amendment.
Okay, any further discussion on the amendment? If not, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion carried. We're down to Karen's amendment. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Based on some discussions I've had with both you and with Representative Solberg, I need to apparently move to reinstate the lines 1.15 on the amendment that was 833. And this is being done with the understanding that there will be a discussion between myself and MHFA about what will happen with the sections that are still in the bill. But you need this in order to get move the bill tonight, I guess, to the next level.
Yeah, to and that will make the language that's in the bill work, we need.
Right.
And this is the, okay, apparently people had trouble hearing Representative Clark,
okay.
But what Representative Clark needs for further discussion, you remember when Representative Hausman moved the author's amendment, she had dropped line 1.15 from her motion, and Representative Clark, as a result of the advice from our fiscal analyst, if the language that's in the bill moves forward, this language is needed. So that's the Clark motion. So any discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. That's all of the amendments that that I have. So we're on discussion on the bill as amended. Representative Paymar. Representative Paymar, I was looking where you were. There you go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I just want to make a brief comment. I did not prepare an amendment, but I did want to say that the Public Safety Division was asked to hear a number of proposals. I think there were 13 local projects, and as well as projects from the Department of Public Safety and the Department of Corrections, and we took that responsibility seriously. And I don't know how the confusion happened, but the memo that I was asked to send to the chair of the Capital Investment Committee, apparently there was some confusion about some of what I had in that memo. But I just wanted to express my displeasure at the what ultimately ended up in the bonding bill that came out of our division. It was not what I recommended, nor I think did it constitute the majority opinion of what should get funded. I guess I'll just make this one case because I know I've been around here long enough to know about bonding bills, and if you can get something in your bonding bill that helps your district, I think it's probably a good thing to do. But, you know, we paid $58,000 to have this public safety training facility needs assessment updated, and the recommendation that came from the Department of Public Safety was that we should have a moratorium on new facilities. And I took that seriously, even though there's some good projects out there that would be nice to fund if we could do it. But nevertheless, that was not followed, and perhaps it was my fault for not being more clear in my memo to Chair Hausman. But I just wanted to, for the record, say that that what was requested by our division was not reflected in this bill.
Okay, any further discussion on the bill? Representative Junkie?
Just to Representative Paymar's point, I found out something, too, the other day, Representative Hausman and others. And, you know, going forward, I think we need to understand these public training facilities, too. A lot of you here, I think, and along as well as myself last week, took a tour of Flint Hills. And taking that tour, I realized they have a public public safety training facility out there that they do as a public service. And so it's interesting. I didn't know about that one. And for all these east side or south side people that are asking for these, they simply can drive over to Flint Hills and let them use it for free. And they have large, they have 1,600 acres out there, and they have a course set up. It's a beautiful course. So I think there's actually some opportunities for private industry to partner, public-private partnerships, that where they're doing some good in a public service down in their area for their communities and others because of the business they're in. And but at the same time, I think we even have to go further, represent Paymar, and understand where all these are, because they're not all publicly owned either. And there's a number of these units available. So I just discovered that last week, so I think it's kind of interesting. I just want to add that to the discussion.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a question. Representative Hausman, in your opening testimony, you said that there was a chart related to the jobs that are created. I don't have that. I'm just wondering if I could get that at some point before we get to the floor with this bill. I think that'd be helpful.
I should have checked before, Mr. Chair. It was included in my committee packet yesterday, but I think it was not included here, so we'll distribute that to you.
Okay, great. And then last question. I was looking through the projects on the natural resources, and I was looking for something that my seatmate, Eric Paulson, always worked on, and those were the wildlife management areas. And I'm wondering where on the spreadsheet I might find those.
And Mr. Chair, I'll defer to Representative Wagenius.
Representative Wagenius.
We had an opportunity this year to capture a great deal of federal funding that supports wildlife. That is when you restore a wetland, and of course we all understand, I don't have to go through it, that wetland provides lots of multiple benefits, that's what we call it. And one of those benefits, of course, is ducks. The federal government has $75 million sitting on the table right now that we could have. It would take $54 million of matching funds. We put on the table $30 million, which will bring in $42 million for a total of $72 million. That's where we concentrated our wildlife money, just because the matching funds were astronomical and their multiple benefits.
Representative Broad, is that okay? You're a little out of my line of vision.
But yeah, so I apologize. Well, I'm just interested in making sure that we have all sorts of ducks. The people in my area really like them, as does my son, and he took a few out of commission this year, and so I wanted to make sure we were replacing them.
Okay, very good. Any further? Let's see, Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hausman, I just kind of have a philosophical question, I guess, for you. As you know, Moody's has downgraded us from stable to negative, our GO bond outlook. And I'm just curious if you think this is the right size. Are you concerned at all that this is a wise decision to have a bonding bill this large? I'm just kind of wondering if you've worked in this area on the committee for many years, and I know you're very knowledgeable about it. And I just want to hear what your take is on it, and if you're concerned about our bond rating being affected further by going forward with this. I'm just would like your
yes, Mr. Chair. I don't have that quote. There are two parts to that sentence that was quoted yesterday, and the first part is our state's outlook has been downgraded from stable to negative. And what that relates to is the big question that we're dealing with: how are we going to balance our budget? That's the component that has been downgraded. The second part of the sentence that some of you may have seen yesterday says that has not yet affected our GO rating, that is still whatever the just short of AAA, which Moody has had for us. So I think what that says to us is we've got a serious budget problem to resolve, and we are all doing that, and this committee will do it. But in terms of our debt, we have been, as a state, over time, very, very responsible. You may have seen those 2007 figures where we're ranked 42nd among all the states in level of debt per capita. We have always had debt service guidelines. Not all states do, but we have. The governor has just revised those. This bill comes well under those guidelines. I believe in those. I believe in responsible levels of debt. We are really just like a family. And if a family plans correctly, they don't buy too much house. They decide what their income allows. That's what the state has always done. That's what the debt service guidelines do. And as I said, this bill is within those guidelines. And at this point, that downgrading from stable to negative didn't relate to GO bonds, but the outlook for our state.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hausman, for your answer. And I don't have another question other than to say that I do have a concern, and I think that we all need to look long and hard if we should be funding things that aren't critical infrastructure projects when we're in the economic situation we are, things like civic centers and cultural centers and things like that. They may be important projects. I'm just wondering if they rise to the level of critical infrastructure needs at a time like this. So I think we all need to really give that a lot of thought and consider what Moody's is trying to tell us. And while you may be true about it not relating directly to GO bonds, I don't know if that's accurate or not. I think just the fact that we're going from stable to negative is sending us a signal that we're headed in the wrong direction. And so I just think that going forward, we really need to think long and hard before we put together a bonding bill that's as large as it is.
And maybe Representative Hausman, those of us that were on your committee saw that language yesterday, but maybe along with some other things you said you were going to distribute, maybe we can do that so that
we will do that.
That clarifies the issue that there's two different issues, that there's that's the budget that we all know we have to resolve constitutionally, and then the GO rating. Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think just everyday Minnesotan doesn't see much difference between their budget and how much debt they're carrying, and don't see that as two separate issues. They kind of go together, but that's neither here nor there. I'm glad you did, Representative Hausman, talk about the change in the guidelines, and I understand where the change in the guidelines came. But just for fun, Representative Hausman, have you done an analysis of what this bill would do for debt service as a percent of our general fund revenue? In other words, what percent would we be at under the old guidelines if this bill were to pass?
We did.
Representative Hausman.
If we were using the old guidelines, I'm going from memory. And perhaps my staff is quickly finding that page. It's the one that has the 0 and 2.5 at the top. No, it's the other, it's Corinne's.
Oh, okay.
There it is. Thanks. Mr. Chair, I asked our fiscal analyst a couple of things. This was before the new debt service guidelines. $725 million is the size of the bonding bill that was figured into the forecast. I asked her to give me the estimated debt service above the forecasted amount if we did a billion-dollar bonding bill. That's not your question. I'll get to your question second. How much additional debt service? In fiscal year 2010, it's zero. In 2011, it's $2.5 million. In 2012, it's $9.7 million. Then I asked, if we passed a billion-dollar bonding bill under the old guidelines, which were in effect at the time, what would it be? In fiscal year 2010-11, it's 3.21. In 2012-13, 3.57, and 2014-15, 3.39. So even under the old guidelines, we were just a whisker above the 3% that we have long had as our debt service guidelines. I will tell you that that all the rating agencies would give advice to states that what the Pawlenty administration did is a good thing. That it's good to have debt service guidelines. It's also a good thing to revisit them from time to time. And so I think they did the appropriate thing. But even measured under our old guidelines, a billion is still keeps us within the 3% range.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Within the 3% range, when we're talking about tens of billions of dollars, whiskers add up to real money, and a whole lot of real money. Representative Hausman, just a comment, right? And it is a thank you on a comment you made to an amendment that was out earlier. It was the A32 amendment, and I quoted you, Representative Hausman. You said you wanted to be respectful of this committee's time, and I want to thank you for that, and I hope of the entire House of Representatives, because Representative Hausman, yesterday I heard the governor say very clearly that the bill that is currently moving through the House and the bill that is currently moving through the Senate are too large, and he would veto those bills. Today, I heard the leader of the GOP party in the House of Representatives made a public comment saying that our party will support the governor 100% and will sustain his veto. Representative Hausman, I hope you are respectful of the legislature's time, that you involve the governor's office in your discussions as you move forward, and that we get a bill that can be signed, that is responsible, and I would hope, as a legislature, we solve the budget problem before we take out our credit card.
Okay, Representative Hausman, do you have any concluding comments? I think that's
yes,
all
thank you,
that
Mr.
I'm
Chair.
Aware of.
Just a couple of closing thoughts. As we went through this entire process, we were always conscious of where we are in this economic time. And we always asked the question, how can we provide an infrastructure investment bill that gets us ready for when the economy recovers? And we believe that when you invest in higher education, particularly as we look ahead to science, technology, engineering, math, the states, colleges, and universities are preparing that workforce of the future. And many of those unemployed are taking advantage of that opportunity right now. So investing in training the workforce of the future is one of those. Though it is invisible, wastewater infrastructure all across our state allows business and industry to prosper. In some cases, in a few years ago in Wilmer and Litchfield, it literally was the difference between a local business expanding or not. And of course, transportation that again attracts, it's an infrastructure essential to attract business and industry to invest here, and certainly to get workers to work. All of those pieces that prepare us as a state for when the economy recovers. I've suggested this bill is one tiny little bright spot in a gloomy economy. When interest rates are low, construction bids are coming in a third less, our tax dollar this year can go much further than if we delay. Among the groups that asked to meet with me in the last few months were the CEOs of all the engineering companies around the state. They took the trouble to come to my district to meet with me and asked what could they do to pass a bonding bill. And then they told me their stories. It is very clear that people around this state, including all of those regional economies that we care about, understand that we are in difficult times, but in this case, a little bit of an investment in infrastructure, just as those early forebears in that first Minnesota legislature have the vision to pass a bonding bill.
Okay, with that, Representative Hausman renews her motion that House File 2700, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any further discussion? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We have just a couple of reminders. At the beginning of the meeting, I mentioned the GAMC bill. We will be waiting for that fiscal note, and that one will be scheduled as soon as we get the green light from Representative Murphy, the author, and Representative Huntley, the division chair. And then on Monday, We have a joint meeting, Ways and Means, and the Finance Committee on the governor's budget.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Solberg.
For everyone's information, I just had a message from Commissioner Hansen. And we've had, as you know, you and I have worked with the commissioner and his budget managers for the last couple months, encouraging them to get the budget to us, recommendations from the governor to us in a very timely fashion. We actually wanted them in January. The last time we met with the commissioner, he had assured us that we would have the budget from the governor on the 12th, on Friday of this week, shortly after the State of the State address. He asked that we postpone anything until then, and I think that was a reasonable request. I've just been notified that the governor announced that this afternoon or evening that he will not have the budget for us on the 12th. He will not release it until sometime on Monday the 15th. We had scheduled a Ways and Means Committee and a Finance Committee to hear that recommendations. We had hopefully on the 12th so everyone could have an opportunity to over the weekend evaluate the recommendations. I can't force the governor to release it any sooner than what he's going to release it. I will have to express my extreme disappointment because I thought we had a very strong agreement with the management and budget to have it before us in that timely fashion. So consequently, we may be holding it sometime in the afternoon. We'll have to wait and see. You and I will have to talk, and we'll have to notify members when the joint meeting will take
place. This is number 9302?
I think it is.
I had my phone turned off, Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman,
we're lucky you didn't follow instructions and had your phone on.
Mr. Chairman, I did not have it. I had it in vibrate, and I shouldn't have done that, I know.
Well, in this instance, we got the message. I see he called mine as well, but I had mine turned off. I did have some discussion with staff if that were to happen. There are some bills that we can take up in the Finance Committee Monday morning, and so we will get that agenda out to you, and then we will, Representative Solberg and I will talk again about the joint hearing and get some more feedback from Commissioner Hansen. Okay, that's all the announcements I have. Anything else, Representative Solberg?
No, that's it, other than it's frustrating.
With that, meeting adjourned.